My name's Karen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Karen. Lots and lots and lots. And whole bunches.
Yeah, and back at you, too. Y'all saved my life, and I'm so glad to be here to get to share with y'all. People in Alcoholics Anonymous are my favorite people because, like David said, we have a common problem, but more than that, we have a common solution. And that's what I want to share with you today is what happened to me, what it was like, and what I'm doing now. Mostly what I'm doing now is sponsoring and going to meetings and trying to share the solution with people that are suffering from this disease that I have. I think I sort of flopped into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about it. But I knew a lot about the disease of alcoholism on a personal basis. Not anything the big book told me about it, but I experienced it firsthand. And it was a very sad and lonely place to be for a long, long time inside my head. I grew up in a very regular family, but I never fit in with them. They were very competitive. And my father was a coach, and the whole world revolved around sports. That was the deal for us. And no one in my family drank, so it wasn't that I was ever exposed to it. But within this family structure, I was not able to move back and forth really freely. I was, the odd man out all the time. I was very, very sensitive and much more of a dreamer than the rest of them. So it took me a lot of years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to come to terms with my place in my family and that I do fit today. But back then I didn't. My schooling was regular, just like everybody else's. Though I was not able to succeed in anything, my father told me, you just can never stick with anything. And so Alcoholics Anonymous is the first thing that I've ever stuck with. And it's made all the difference in my life today. I married when I was very young. I guess I was looking for a geographical cure, though I wasn't drinking, but it was in this marriage that I did take my first drink. And once I took that drink, it was champagne. We were at a country club at a wedding. And what happened when I took that drink was I felt like they looked. The drink made me feel just like they looked, and they looked like they were very comfortable with themselves. And I knew that I wasn't. And when I drank, it was wonderful. The bubbles came, and I was able to talk and dance and jump in the pool with everybody else. It was a wedding, and we weren't supposed to be in there, but it was fun, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. My husband had to carry me out of the country club that night, and it took me about 2 weeks to get over that hangover. And I swore I'd never do it again, and I didn't for a long, long time. That marriage didn't work out. And so I began to date and be on my own, and I had very high-powered jobs, like I answered a telephone and, told people where the party was going to be tonight, and I did an awful lot of partying in Mobile, Alabama, and I had a good time. It was a lot of fun. It was not unusual for me to leave work and go out and party all night and come back to work in my same clothes the next day. There's a place, I think it was called Papa George's, that stayed open, it was like at 4 o'clock in the morning. You could go down there and dance and drink, and then you could go to work after that. And so I did that too much. And in that period of time, I became bulimic. I didn't know I was alcoholic, but I became bulimic, and I had to move home with my parents. Of course, there was a man that was moving up there, too, so I followed him. But that didn't work out either. But I got a job, and I got a job at Crockmeyer's. Y'all know T.P. Crockmeyer's. And today I know why I got that job, because I could drink. I mean, the party was there, and that's where I wanted to be, where the action was. And I didn't want to be in the real world in life because I couldn't deal with it. It was boring, not exciting, but the bars were. And I worked there for a little while, and I met my second husband at that time. And I wiggled him around and got married to him finally. And that's not working out either. But during this time, my drinking really escalated, and I began to have a lot of depression and loneliness, despair, resentment, and all of it finally, the fear came out on top of the cream. I mean, of the, you know, it came to the top, and that's what my deal was fear. I had lots of anxiety attacks, and they would just come at odd times, you know. And I would, I don't know if y'all have ever had a panic attack, but if you have, it's kind of, if you haven't, I'll tell you, it's kind of like cooking a baked potato in a microwave and then throwing it against the wall, and you're just splattered. But I didn't know what was wrong with me. Through a series of strange events, I knew inside of me, and I think most alcoholics do, that my drinking was the problem. And I became convinced of that, and I had hit emotional bottom. And it was after the birth of my second child. He was 3 months old. And I finally was able to go to the beach, and I went with some couples, and I got very, very drunk. I didn't drink all the way down there because I was controlling my drinking then, and I was not going to drink on this beach trip. And when I got there, I'd done such a good job, I just got smashed. And the next day, I had to go back to an emergency room. I was always going to emergency rooms because I was having big troubles. Really nothing was wrong with me. I tried to tell the doctor I had gotten very drunk that night, and he said, okay. And I said, I got really drunk. And he said, okay, lady. And the third time I said, I got very, very drunk last night. What I was trying to do was tell him that I had a problem. And he looked at me and he said, lady, just drink some Gatorade, you'll be fine. I wish it were that simple. We came home from that trip, and I got drunk again, and I was still drunk the next morning when we were leaving. And I went to McDonald's, and I had a couple girls with me, and they kept telling me, don't eat, you'll be sick, and I was sick all the way home, and you know, I felt odd being out again, because they had drank, and they were running around in their underwear, and they were fine the next day, and I was still drunk. And on the way home, I was at the jumping off place where I knew I couldn't drink anymore, but I didn't know how to live without drinking. And we stopped at this little place. It's called Floralla, Alabama. I don't know if y'all have ever been there. It's a tiny little town, and they pull down to these trees by this lake to get this Spanish moth off the trees. Now, I'm in the car dying, okay? And they're out there spraying Raid in these garbage bags for the Spanish moth. But there was a real significant thing that happened at that place, because that's where I was surrendered by alcoholism. I told God at that point, I'll do anything. It wasn't like, God, get me out of this one, or I won't do this again. I said, oh God, I will do anything, if you will only help me. And within a few days, I was in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to a therapist, and she told me that I needed to go to AA, and if I couldn't stay sober for 90 days, then they would need to put me in a treatment center. You know, I didn't know if I could stay sober 90 days. If you'd asked me, I didn't think I could. But I went to a meeting, and the main reason I came there was because I never wanted to drink again. I just never wanted to drink again. And I came into the room, and lots of people talk about how they loved them, but you know, when they walked in the rooms, that they didn't do that to me. They were kind of mean. I was so scared and so frightened, and I was, like we talk about, crawling in on your belly, looking down at everybody, and everyone looked so strange. And they were all talking to each other, and nobody was listening all at once, and you just had to go through all the smoke to get in there, and I thought, girl, you have really hit the bottom of the bucket now. But, you know, I had no choice. This was the last house on the block for me, and I had no choice. I mean, this maybe there was hope for me there. Just maybe. And that's the only reason I went and the only reason I stayed. And I did find out there was hope for me there, because y'all began to share your experience, strength, and hope in those meetings. And I began to hear the solution. And I knew, I didn't know if I could make it. I knew I couldn't do it on my own. I tried too many times, but I thought just maybe, possibly, I might be able to do this thing. Of course, you know, in that first year, we're all thinking, I'm not going to get it. They got it. I'm not going to get it. And I certainly felt that way. But what I did get at those first few meetings was somebody told me what was wrong with me. And for all these years, I had wondered, what was wrong with me? You know, what the hell is wrong with me? Everybody's got their life together but me. I know today that's judging people's outsides by my insides, and that is a huge waste of time for me. But I didn't know that then. I also found out that all I had to do was not drink one day at a time. And I didn't know if I could do that, but I was willing to try. And so they said, get a sponsor. And I was afraid not to do what they told me to do. So, you know, you just sit around and you listen in meetings and you try to do what they tell you to do. If you want to get sober, and that's a big if. I know when people I work with today, that's a huge if. You know, if you want what we have, you must do what we do. And I heard that pretty much from the time I came in, because I was fortunate to come in to a group with some old-timers in it, some hardcore AAs, and that's the way I like it. And I got a sponsor, and on a daily basis, I called her, and she told me how to live, because I didn't know. She told me how to wash the dishes. I mean, I was flying apart at the seams trying to get sober. And it's really funny when people come into Alcoholics Anonymous today, I hear them say, I'm supposed to be better, I'm supposed to be better. I was crazy my entire first year. I mean, talk about white-knuckle sobriety. I don't think I had any knuckles left from holding on. I was absolutely just stark raving sober. And the spiritual awakening had not, a deep one had not taken place in my life. But what I did have was hope that maybe this could work for me. So on a daily basis, I tried to do this deal. And I lived to go to meetings at 8 o'clock. I mean, I absolutely lived through the day to make it to an 8 p.m. meeting. And that's what I still go to. I like 8 p.m. meetings because that my group, because they are in the solution at those meetings, and that's where I want to be today. So that's what I did. And I can tell y'all, I wasn't too attractive then. And I was just a mess. But they loved me anyway. And I hear a lot of people say, they loved me till I could love myself. And that's certainly true for me, because if it were not for y'all, I wouldn't be standing here today, safe, sane, and sober. And I'm very fortunate for that, and I know it. I hope that I can give back a little of what Alcoholics Anonymous has given to me, because it absolutely saved my life. For the first few years, I tried to work the program. You know, how you do. Sort of my way and sort of your way, and that was not a good deal for me. But what I know today is you have to be surrendered again in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's to step 6 and 7, and that has happened for me. But in those days, I didn't know that. And I didn't think that I had to do the things that you had to do, because I was special and different. And I found out I do. I didn't have to clean up after meetings. I didn't clean my own house, and I certainly wasn't going to clean up after y'all. And I didn't have to go to, you know, I made it to several meetings, but I didn't have to go to as many meetings as y'all did. And I tried sponsorship. That just was not my thing. The people really got on my nerves, and they just would not do the things I asked them to do, and they just weren't willing. And after a couple of times of sponsoring, I just gave it up. Somebody told me, you know, you don't have to sponsor. You don't have to sponsor. You know, there's something else for you to do. And so, out of 10 that tell you have to and 1 that tells you you don't, I took her advice. And I didn't sponsor for a while, and I got very sick, very, very sick. And at 5 years of sobriety, I was totally crazy. Along the way, though, I did try to work the steps. And you have to have someone that's worked the steps so if you want to work them. You know, if you have a sponsor that hasn't worked the steps, they don't have anything to give you. So I needed someone that had worked the steps. I needed someone that knew the big book and was excited about it and was excited about recovery. I hear, I've heard someone talk about that they wish that they could be back in their first year. of sobriety because it was so exciting and it was so intense. And the way I feel about that is if I wish that, I'm not busy enough in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not right in the middle of it. Because there is something, y'all know, there is something going on every day. Somebody is having a crisis every day. I mean, y'all, this is the most exciting place to be. I don't know what other people do. But at our home group, I'm telling you, we have a lot going on. Somebody is flying through the door, and I'm just glad it's not me most of the time today, because it has been. But somebody is having a big crisis all the time, and we're on the hotline. It's wonderful. It's exciting, and it's exciting to see people grow towards the light. And sometimes it's sad to see people walk back into the darkness. Bob Olson says that Alcoholics Anonymous is made up of two kinds of people. The people that are serious about sobriety and the bullshitters. And all the people that are serious hang out together, and all the bullshitters hang out together. And you need to look who you're sitting next to. And when he said that at this roundup, I understood that. Because you can see it. You can see the people that are serious about sobriety, who want to grow spiritually, who hunger and thirst for it. You know those people. They're active. They're busy. They're not talking about themselves. They're not thinking about themselves. They're just doing the deal, one day at a time. And yes, they have huge problems. We all have large problems in our life. I mean, we are a problem people. But the solution is to turn outward. Is to turn outward and look at that next rung and see my higher power in his eyes. And how can I be of service? What can I do to help you? So at 5 years of sobriety, my marriage was not, I tried to work this program in it, and it was, my husband's not an alcoholic, and it was very, very difficult. And I have these little children that I was trying to carry the message to, and that was really great. I mean, that's wonderful when you can take this program to your children. Those of you that have children, you know how fortunate you are. You don't have to feel guilty about the things you do with your children if you're a mom, because if you're practicing spiritual principles with them, you see it in them. It comes out in them. I had a teacher tell me one time that my daughter had such a spiritual side to her, you know, and I just thought, I wonder where that came from. I don't have to feel guilty today about screaming at my children, because I don't do those things today. I know I'm a good mother to them. I gave 100% of my effort to that, and I did what the book told me to do. It works in all areas of my life. I heard Susan and Betty Ford speak at the Council on Alcoholism, and Susan Ford, her daughter, said something that is very true that I've seen. But I don't think a lot of people know it. It's very difficult for mothers in Alcoholics Anonymous. If your husband is not an alcoholic, in the first place, they don't understand, and they can't. And the second place is it's hard to get to meetings. It's hard to walk out the door with your children hanging on your leg and crying and saying, Mommy, please stay home. Please don't go. And she also said, the husbands say, well, if you get the children to bed and you get supper done and you do everything you have to do, then you can go to a meeting. And, you know, you get there at 1 minute till 8, and you have to leave at 1 minute after 9. And that takes away a lot of fellowship, a lot of growth from you. And my life was kind of like that. But I made a choice and a decision. When I was 5 years sober, I went completely out of reality. Worse than I usually am. And I began to cry. I couldn't leave my house. I couldn't answer the telephone. I was just terrified. And I went to a meeting one night, and I had to get up and leave the meeting, and I had to go find my sponsor, because not only was I flying backwards in my head, I think I was physically doing that, and I was terrified. And my sponsor, I just beat on her door and beat on her door, and finally she came home. She wasn't home, but I wasn't leaving. And, you know, I love my sponsor. She's wonderful. She has such a great sense of humor. About that time, her husband, one of my heroes, Clay, came in when we got in, and she said, oh, God, Clay, Karen's dying again. Yeah, serious. And she called another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they came over and they sat with me. And that is the worst place I've ever been. I had nothing to, at least alcohol relieved it, relieved that rubber band that's pulled so tight. But I had nothing to relieve this. And so they talked to me for a while, and Clay, who was a man of very few words, except what was in the book, he would look at me and he would say, "Karen, believe. Just believe." And I think he said that to me about 13 times that night. "Just believe. That's all you have to do is just believe." And he had to say it enough to me because I was so out of it that I probably wouldn't have remembered. Within a few days, my sponsor called my husband and told him that I was going to have to be put in the hospital because it was problems other than alcohol. And I did not want to have problems other than alcohol. It was enough to have alcoholism. I just really didn't need anything else. But it was, and I was very sad about that. But I got to the point where I was in a fetal position crying, and I could not get up. And my mother and my husband, my mother had to hold me in her lap like a baby and rock me. And I know that was very hard for her. And I was very glad that I had made my amends to my mother because I needed her and my father desperately. My father said, so they put me in the psych ward, and I was diagnosed. You know, I had I looked like I needed to be there. And one of the patients told me, and said, "Boy, I felt really sorry for you. You look bad." he's an alcoholic, too. But my doctor diagnosed me, a wonderful doctor. And you're so fortunate when you find a wonderful doctor, wonderful psychiatrist. And he diagnosed me with problems. It's something very much like alcoholism, but not the same. And I knew that I'd had this problem all my life. And today I can be free from that problem. Not only can I take care of my alcoholism on a daily basis, but I also have to take care and maintain this other problem on a daily basis too. And I do that through work and self-sacrifice for others. That's the deal for me. When I was up there, my father was very nervous like me, and he came up and he came in my room, and he was just terrified. And he's this really athletic man, you know, he's small like me, but he's really always in control and nervously in control. And he said, I was going to bring you some crayons and a coloring book. So, whoa, Dad. I told my mother, I think you need to take him home. There's another place for him. When I came out of the hospital, my sponsor had gotten a sponsor at the roundup in February that we had attended, and she got Peggy Martin, which was very fortunate for her and for me, too. And Peggy told her that she sponsored someone with my same problems, and I was going to have to work twice as hard as everybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, whoa. I mean, here I've been through this terrible time. I can't believe that they're saying that to me. You know, they never cut you any slack in there. If you want to know the truth, just, you know, ask your sponsor. And it's true. I have had to work twice as hard. But I've got twice the benefit, too. About this time, I think it was like 2 weeks after I came out of the hospital, I was very shell-shocked. Well, let me tell you this. When I was in the hospital, something very amazing happened to me. I really did not have it all together to be able to talk to people. I was, you know, not okay. Needless to say, I guess you'd be in a psych ward if you were okay. But the thing that I could talk about was, there was a guy in there talking, the same one that told me I looked so pitiful, was talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was the first thing I was able. Out of my mouth came, you know, what the big book says. What the big book says. You can get sober. It doesn't matter what. If you want to get sober, you can get sober. So I got the big book out, and I can't remember what page it was, but I really couldn't talk to him. I went to the nurse's desk, and I said, "Do you have a big book?" And they gave me one, and I took it back, and I turned it to the page, and I just pointed to him, to the solution in it. And we struck up a friendship, and I see him at meetings today. In that psych ward, it was fun. I had a great time. I laughed so much, and I really needed to laugh a lot. There was one girl there that if she saw a sign, she could find, I mean, lots of letters, she could find the middle letter right in the sign. And I was amazed by that. So every time we go out to smoke, we'd pass all these signs, and I'd go, okay, find the letter. It's just you meet some uncommon people. But, you know, we're all the same. We're all the same. Even in the loony bin, we're just people that are hurting. And it was really fun. It was a lot of fun. One time when we got our smoke break, they rolled a dead body out in front of the people from the psych ward. Now, we were a little nervous anyway. And one of the girls, her legs started shaking, you know? And they said, now that's a coping skill. Fine with me. Of course, we all lit up cigarettes, you know? And she said, I've got to go in, I've got to go in. And when she said that, we were all smoking about three at a time because we knew they'd take us in. And we couldn't smoke very often. And, of course, we had to go in because she got so upset. But, you know, that really wasn't the people to roll the dead body in front of, I don't think. Nevertheless, I got out of that place and with a lot of, you know, experiences. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and Clay had told me that before I went in, he said, you're not the same, you're different, you've changed. And for an old-timer that you look up to so much, that was really neat for him to tell me that. And I had changed, and I knew it. And I picked up the brush to the toilet, and I went back into the bathroom, and I shook it at God, and I said, okay, if this is what you want, you got it, Big Daddy, let's go. You know, this is my story, and that's what happened. And I don't know how you can have a spiritual experience cleaning the toilet, but I just know I did. And so the people I sponsor today just fight for the toilets. And I talk about that. And I'll tell you something else. We were sitting in a meeting one night, in a business meeting, and a girl said, and I said, you know, this place needs to be cleaned. Everybody's not taking their part doing that. You know, that's our responsibility, to, not only to each other, but to the people that are, the drunks that are still coming through those doors. I want them to see this place like I saw it. And there was somebody cleaning then. And a girl spoke up and she said, well, this doesn't look like any place I ever drank in. And you must have not drank in the same place as I did. And I told the girls I sponsored, I said, she's not going to be here long. In about 2 weeks, she went back out. And she's tried to make it back, but she hadn't made it back yet. You know, this deal's about humility. Well, it's not about me being right or wrong. It's about me being okay with being wrong and doing what's in front of me to do. I had no one to sponsor at that time when I came out, and my sponsor kept telling me, get somebody to sponsor. And I was trying to tell her that nobody wanted me to sponsor them. So I don't care if you have to go to the mission, just get somebody to sponsor. I wasn't able to do that. Jean called me in the middle of the night about 2 weeks after I was out of the hospital, and she said, Karen, Clay has died. I hate those phone calls from Jean. And I wasn't able to be emotionally there for my sponsor, but I did bring the body because they told me to just suit up and show up. And it was very devastating, not only to Janice, but to all of us at Fellowship. And he was our hero. He was our big book thumper. He was our light. And it was like, what were we going to do? Our light was out. And I'll tell you what we did. We did exactly what he would have wanted us to do. We all had to pick up our big books and go to a meeting. We all had to carry the message. We had to continue to do that, and we had to really hold each other up. And that happened. That happened at my group. We are a strong traditions group because of Janice and Clay. And we believe in the big book. And, you know, I don't know where anybody else's 12 steps are, but if they're not in the big book, then it's not Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the program, you know. We survived that. We still suffer from the loss of him. Most of us talk to him all the time, get a little direction from the boy. But we miss him terribly. But I thought, how will we ever go on? But you do. You do. Because the solution is there within each other. And we just, like I said, did what he wanted us to do. I am from the fellowship group in Huntsville, Alabama, and I think it's the best group, the best home group anywhere. And I've heard if you don't think your home group's the best, you need to get another home group. And I want to show them that I think it's the best, so I want to be there. I love it. I love being there every night. I love seeing the drunks come in. I love talking to them. They feel like I feel, and it's exciting. I love telling those newcomers, get out of the parking lot and get in the meeting. Oh, they just hate you when you tell them that, you know. They look at you like, how dare you? And you know how they feel, because that's what they told you. It's really fun to be in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I tell the people I sponsor, and I do sponsor several people today, and I'm very fortunate for them. I am going through a divorce right now, and if it were not for the girls I sponsor, I wouldn't be here. I mean, I just wouldn't be here. They, as I try to carry this program to them, they give it back to me much more than I would ever be able to give to them. I tell them, and now I forgot I was going to tell them, but it doesn't matter. Tell them later. We took a spiritual retreat this spring to the beach. The girls I sponsor and some of the girls that they sponsor that have a year of sobriety. And it was really fun. We were all there together. I mean, about 11 crazy women together. And we had meetings every few hours. My sponsor was there, and she kept us all in line. She told us what to do, and we would hide from her in case she was going to tell us more. But it was wonderful. It was so neat to be with a group of women. The women in Alcoholics Anonymous have made my life. They are the ones that have given me sobriety. I could not do without the women, and I was the person that didn't have women friends. There's always competition for me. But the women in Alcoholics Anonymous are my strength. If you don't have women friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't cut yourself off from that. You need to get some, because that's where it's at for the women. I mean, the ladies are wonderful, just wonderful. I was going to tell y'all that I tell my girls, you know, get right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if you fall, the group will hold you up. But if you're on the edges, nobody's going to know you fell off. Nobody's going to know, and you're not going to be missed. Somebody might think of you from time to time, I wonder what happened to so-and-so. But, you know, if you're not right in the middle, they're not going to be able to move in and lift you up and walk you through whatever you're going through. So at this point in my life, I have to be right there in the middle and trying to carry this message. And it's crazy and fun and awesome. And I heard someone say in a meeting night before last, he wears a bracelet his son gave him, and it says, God is awesome. And I thought, yeah, and that's true too. God is awesome. Over these last few years, my spiritual life has really grown. I mean, I've grown closer to this power that was just, I knew God was keeping me sober. I knew that, but I didn't know him. And today, I'm seeking that. I'm seeking to grow towards him and grow towards the light. And I do that through prayer and meditation and through 12-step work. I see God and I experience him in the face of another alcoholic. Somebody said, I don't know what God looks like. And I thought, yeah, I do. He looks like that person sitting across the room from you. He's there in the face of your child. When you look up in the sky, so blue and so beautiful, that's his face. You know, he's all around us. It's not a big deal. How could I figure God out? I couldn't even figure out, you know, how to drink right. But how could I figure God out, and why would I think that I could? If he is so powerful to perform this miracle that happened in my life, why would I think I could figure him out? And I read this thing one time, and it said, this census taker came to this lady's house, and he said, we're here to find out how many people are in the United States. And she said, Lordy, honey, I don't know. And that's the point of it. I don't have to know how God works. You know, I don't have to know what God looks like. I experience God every day of my life. And it's only through this program that I'm able to do that. Despair is what brought me here, and desperation. Absolute desperation to live without drinking. And I didn't know how, and I couldn't live without it. love is what keeps me here. You know, it's okay for me because I know y'all love me. I know without you, I would die. I will die. And I will die a miserable alcoholic death in my head. But just talking to you and sharing our experience, strength, and hope, I am able to walk out in the world and to live in reality with all its yuckiness. My life, I was telling my sponsor, my life is wonderful today. Yeah, there's some bad stuff going on, but my life is fantastic. I am a college student at 39. That's a real trip. I took my daughter to class with me one day, and a girl had pink hair, and she was just overwhelmed. But I really like it. I love it. And I couldn't have done that. And I had to go observe this week. And they told me to be there at 7:30, and I was there at 7. You know, I'm the person that never made it anywhere on time. I can remember Clay saying, if you don't get to meeting on time, you didn't leave home soon enough. And I just was very offended for him saying that because I was the person walking in the door. But it's true. It's true. That's my job today, to act like a sober alcoholic. You know, I am a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know when I'm going to be demonstrating the big book or to whom. And that's my job. But I like being on time today. It makes me feel good about me. Everything I'm doing today makes me comfortable within my own skin, and I never was. And it's merely because of y'all that I'm able to do that. Everything in my life that's good today is a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I want to know how to stay sober, I will get it in the book. The directions are there. They're there to be read. I heard somebody talking about last night about big book thumpers, and I thought, right on, man. You know, that's the deal for me. If it's not in the big book, I really don't need to be talking about it because I don't know anything that's not in the book. It's just one drunk talking to another. And I don't think Alcoholics Anonymous gets any better than at the home group level. That's where all my life is. You know, that's where all my excitement and all my joy is. I never thought that I would be one of those AA people that goes to meetings all the time. And I did not want to be one of those people. And I'm one of those people today, and I like it. God has a wicked sense of humor. I mean, truly wicked. Just what you don't want, you get. But I'm happy. I'm happy to be there, and I'm happy with my life today. And it is a result of y'all. I don't dwell on the promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. They come true for me when I'm doing the work. And if I'm not doing the work, if I'm not carrying the message, I can't expect to get them. My sponsor told me this is not about you being happy, Karen. This is about you, for you to be of love and service to God and your fellow man. And that's what the deal is. It's not about me. Until I turned outward and thought about you, I was miserable. You know, trying to control it all, trying to get it all together. You know, 3 or 4 years of sober, you take it all back. You know, I need to handle this. I can fix my marriage. I can make life wonderful. And I can't. This is a God deal. But I can hold that flashlight for my people. I can tell them actions to take that come out of the book. I can give them guidance and direction. I can lift them up when they fall. And they can lift me up when I fall. And they have. This is such a wonderful way to live. Get right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't, you're missing it. You're missing the deal. Because that's where it is. It's about cleaning toilets and making coffee and comforting that person coming in. It's about saying, honey, you're not a bad person. You're just a sick person. That's what they told me, and I didn't know that. I thought I was crazy. I am. But nevertheless, you can stay sober. If there is anything that I can wish for you, for me to stay, it's to stay teachable. It's to be desperate on a daily basis for spiritual growth. It's to surrender to the program, stop fighting. Big Book tells me I don't have to fight anymore. You know, alcohol, it's not going to be a problem for me anymore, and it isn't today, as long as I do the work. I've got to be into action. Action is the key for me. It's not thinking, and God, I'm not going to think my way into the solution, I'm going to act it. And that's what I try to tell the people I sponsor. I have to be into action. Because if I don't, my thinking comes back. I get very, very sick. So, I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you for sharing, you know, your time with me. I do love you. I'm very grateful for you. And I hope y'all have a great Gigafi.